All right, guys, what I'd like you to do is I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles to James chapter 5. The letter of James chapter 5. So in the next few weeks, we're going to be wrapping up James. We have actually two more lessons here that we're going to do. And what I want you to grasp and understand is that as we are finishing up this letter, James is bringing all of his thoughts together. So if you think about it, we've been talking about living our everyday lives with Jesus. And so he's been telling us everything about how to handle the struggles in our life and the attitude that we need to have, how to handle temptation and recognizing that we're the problem with temptation. He's talked about the reality of what true spirituality is. It's controlling our tongue, and he's talked about that. It's about our being there for others, especially those who are destitute or in need, as well as keeping ourselves spotless from the world. He's been focusing in on all of that. And the reality that you and I need to be humble, that you and I need to humble ourselves before him. And if you think about it, we're going to be looking at verse 1 here in a minute, but if you go back to the last verse of chapter 4, let me just read it to you. You should know it, but I just want you to be aware of it because he's going to continue with the thought. And here's what he says. It's a verse we know, but we tend to ignore. What do you mean we tend to ignore? Well, listen to what he says. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin. So he just told us that as far as the whole issue of being humble before him, and we talked about that last week, and the reality is that in my humility, if I know what I need to do, and I don't do it, it's sin. So now we enter into chapter 5, and he's going to talk about something that's very important. It's not like its own little thing. It actually comes out of what he just said. Because here's the thing. We live in a world, a Christian world, where we understand that Jesus forgives us. I can't do anything for my salvation. He's done it all for me. And so we think that now that we're saved, I don't need to worry about anything. I don't need to worry about what I've done or haven't done. We almost think like we're exempt, whether we realize it or not, we think we're exempt from having to answer for ourselves before God. And what I'm going to tell you is, I especially want you to understand, you're not exempt. You maybe are exempt from going to hell, but there is a reckoning that's coming. And you have to answer for yourself. Why do you think Jesus says, like, every idle word will be brought into judgment? So have you said anything dumb today? Do you even remember what you said? I'm getting to a place now, I'm going to be 60 in a week. I'm thankfully forgetting, but I can't use that as an excuse. Because the dumb things I say will be brought up. And I'll have to answer for them. But see, the problem is for us as believers, we think, well, that's not a big sweat. I'm going to be with Jesus. I've got salvation. I don't need to worry about it. Yeah, really? I mean, think about it. I think about times when I was growing up, my mom would say the deadly words to me, wait till your dad gets home. And so then when dad got home from doing his duty on the base at Fort Jackson, he's been struggling all day being a drill instructor, and he's coming home. He just wants to sit in front of the TV and watch the news or something. And then mom says, do you know what George did today? Those scary words, which I could hear from my bedroom. And then my dad say, George! And then I'd have to come and what? Give an account. Now, did that mean I was going to get kicked out of the family, go grab my pillow and a bag of clothes because I'm getting kicked out to the street that day? No, it didn't mean that. But I still had to what? Answer for what I did. And I think sometimes we lose that. We forget that. There's a coming reckoning. And James wants us to be reminded of that. He wants us to remember, and he wants us to choose something different. And that's what we're going to talk about today in our passage. Now, when we read it, you're going to say, well, this has to do with rich people. No, not necessarily. It's all of us. So I want you to notice what he says. So I want you to notice with me, we're going to look at verse 1. Here's what he writes. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasure in the last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you have kept back by fraud, are crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you. Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and latter rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. All right, so here's what I'm going to point out to you. We could take this section and we can basically divide it into two parts. Verses 1 to 6 is the first part. That is accountability. There's accountability. And then when we get to verses 7 and 8, we're going to see the reality of the fact that we need to be waiting for him. So let's talk about accountability. He uses the reality of the wealthy to express a truth that's actually true for you and I. And from this, there's six things that you and I need to be aware of. Six things that you and I need to be aware of in our lives today. So we just can't just float through life and do our own thing, not worried about the reality that I have to answer later on. The fact is, we're going to answer, and he's going to bring it out of this passage. Using a rich person as an example, which, by the way, you say, well, I'm not rich. I don't need to worry about that. Really? You're not rich? You actually might find it surprising that you actually may have more than others. And they view you as rich. I just have been around the world. I've met people who are destitute. They look at me and say, well, he's a rich guy. Really? I know better than that where I live, but really, am I? In a way, I am. We're all accountable. So what do we mean? Here's what I want you to see. First thing you need to see, verse 1 kind of tells you like it is. It's kind of a shocking statement. He says, come you rich, weep and howl. He's telling people to cry out in fear. Why? Well, there is a call to fear the coming judgment. There's a call to fear it. Now, I thought about this for a while because I thought about how we are as believers and about how we are anticipating the return of Jesus. We anticipate that we're going to be with him. I can almost guarantee you that fear is not what's on the forefront of most believers' mind when they think about Jesus coming back. They're excited. They're ready. They want it to happen. Fear's not there, but he's saying, howl. Weep. Why? Why does he do that? Because here's the reality, folks. Every one of us, let me just say it, every one of us, we have regrets. And somehow we just are hoping that we never have to deal with those things again. We're just hoping that that would be forgotten. We're just hoping that that will never be brought up. That statement we made, or those hurtful words that we uttered, or that action that we did will not even be remembered. But the fact is, it will be remembered. You will have to give an account. So have fear. It's okay to be fearful. Fearful is not a negative thing. There is a sense in which fear is a good thing. There is a sense in which being afraid of someone who is far greater than you actually is beneficial. Because he's going to hold us accountable. See, my friends, when you came to salvation, you had your sins forgiven. That doesn't mean you have to never worry about it again. You still have to give an account. And you don't have to worry about going to hell, but you still have to give an account. How do you know that, George? When you go over to Revelation chapter 20, it talks about the great white throne judgment. And the one who sits on the throne, even the earth and the sky want to run away from him. So terrible is he who sits on the throne. Which, by the way, who sits on the throne? Jesus. And then it says, the books will be opened. Now, what are the books? That is the record of everyone's life. And everyone has to give an account. And then it says, then the book of life will be opened. And only those who are found in the book of life will enter into eternity. But everyone else will go to the lake of fire. We have to give an account. Even though you're saved. We know that from 1 Corinthians chapter 3. It talks about that there is one foundation and believers build on that foundation. Wood, hay, stubble, gold, precious stones, silver. And then it is brought into judgment. Fire will consume it. And what happens to wood, hay, stubble when you throw it in the fire? It burns up. But what happens with gold, silver, precious stones? They are purified. And some will have everything burned up except that they are what, Paul says, saved. That's a scary thing, isn't it? To have to give an account and find out that everything you did was meaningless, except you're saved. Scary, isn't it? There's a call to fear the coming judgment. Look with me at verse 2 and 3 now. Here's what he says. Your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-ridden. Your gold and silver have corroded and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. Here's what I want you to see. Our materialistic indulgences will testify against us. Well, what do you mean by that, George? Materialistic indulgences. We all struggle with them. We all struggle with them. They're the things that we want for ourselves. They're the stuff, the toys that we like. They're the things that we want to indulge ourselves in. But the reality is that we live in a world where there are needs around us, and sometimes because of those needs, we're just hoarding stuff for ourselves while neglecting others around us. We already talked about that earlier in chapter 2 and 3. Because true faith is reaching out to the orphan and the widow, right? But we indulge ourselves. While all around us are people who are in need. And he says, look, that's going to testify against you. That everything was about you and what you wanted. And we got to give an account for that. Here's the third thing he talks about here. Look with me again from 2 and 3. Our focus was fixated on gaining wealth in the last days.